nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So I'd like to start off with thanking the organizers for having me here and being part of this whole beautiful workshop and event. And I'd like to, I guess, discuss the important happy marriage between metals and semiconductors. I won't, as of yet, say who is the metal and the semiconductor, but for sure it looks very happy. Also, I was also was very happy that Vladimir told me that nobody can leave until my talk is done, because the bus will only be leaving when this is finished. So you'll have to stay here. So before I start, I'd like to acknowledge all the students and postdocs that have done the work, and also particular the funding from various agencies and collaborations with Bruce Clemens' group at Stanford, and also Nader and Geta, who is here in the audience on some of this work.
Who is the metal? Who is semiconductor?
Exactly. You'll find out. That's a good it's a good question. So I will talk about things only, since it's very practical, that are simple and unavoidable. Typically, these things are things that I or my students can make and actually can have a real near-term impact. And in particular, I'd like to focus on what's happening in the information processing technologies, where it's clear that if you look at computers, everybody wants higher speed, faster internet, etc. But thermal issues, heat generation on chips, and interconnect delay time issues are some of the major challenges that we're facing right now. And interestingly enough, optics and nanophotonics may make a big impact here. People are currently trying to avoid some of these issues by going from single-core processors, where we had a little integrated circuits with interconnects, to multi-core systems to spread out heat over larger areas. But then in that case, we'll need these red lines, large optical interconnects that can carry enormous amounts of information between the different cores in an information processing system. And one of the question may be, can we already use some of the metals and semiconductors that we already have in a chip in a simple fashion to solve this problem? And the key opportunity for photonics is to try, or nanophotonics, is to try and bridge the gap between the microphotonics based on dielectrics that we already have and the truly nanoscale electronics that's well below the diffraction limit. So the interesting thing is that the answer to this question simply came as we are scaling electronics down from some of the first transistors and integrated circuits that you could still see with your own eye to the truly nanoscale electronic interconnects and transistors that we can have on the chip that are really at the nanoscale. And the important realization is that in scaling in the electronics industry, we passed this enormously important length scale for us, the wavelength of light. And in doing so, we've gone from nice and reflective metals, like the wire you can buy in the hardware store, to beautiful tunable interactions with metals. And this is a picture I've stolen from Naomi Hollis's group, thank you, where you can see that by changing the geometry, for example, or the dielectric environment, or the type of metals, you can tune the interaction of light with a material, and this interaction is strongly resonant as soon as these particles are sub-wavelength. Interestingly enough, also, of course, we know that semiconductors, important semiconductors like silicon, if we start breaking up our shiny macroscopic silicon wafers to the nanoscale and, for example, make semiconductor nanowires that could be part of a photodetector, and look at these under white light illumination and dark field microscope, you see that small nanowire diameters, 30 nanometer, appear blue under white light, and you can tune it through, as I'll show, a resonant interaction all the way to the red by just changing the size. And these sizes are well above the Bohr exciton radius of silicon, so there's no quantum mechanical effect. This is all optical resonances similar to the metals. So in principle, I could stop my talk here and note the importance that as we are scaling down to the nanoscale, everything becomes resonant. Just like the saying that everything you pump hard enough will laze here. Everything that you bring to the nanoscale unavoidably becomes resonant, and we better use this. So one nice example, let's start with the semiconductors, is that if you put a semiconductor nanowire in an optical dark field microscope illuminated with light, you can look at its resonant light scattering properties. And for example, in an image, if you send the light to an imaging detector or an image sensor, you can see that this particular nanowire, that's about 80 nanometers or so in size, looks nice and yellow. Or you could send it towards a spectrometer where you can take the scattering spectrum and you can see a nice peak in the scattered light intensity. That'll argue has to do with the Mie resonance or light scattering resonance of this wire. So you can tune this, and this is more quantitatively than I showed before. If you take wires of different diameter from 30 to 185, and you take the scattering spectra as a function of wavelength, then you see that small wires, 30 nanometer diameter, peak resonance scattering in the blue part of the spectrum. And as you go bigger, 40, 75, 185, you slowly see red shift in the scattering spectra, but also you'll see multiple peaks occur all across the solar spectrum and the infrared. And if you're a creative artistic student, for example, you can make silicon nanowire paints and make flowers just by choosing the right size of nanoparticles or nanowires and arrange them in a creative shape. These wires, just like we know for metallic structures that have a strong polarization dependence of the light scattering, nanowires made out of high-index materials like the semiconductors also have polarization dependence. Here's images of the same wire illuminated what we define here as transverse electric and transverse magnetic, with either electric or the magnetic field perpendicular to the long axis of the wire. And you see already visually a little difference in color. And depending on the wavelength where you look in the scattering spectrum, you can see a similar behavior in scattering. Sometimes TM and TE resonances are degenerate. Or at other wavelengths, you see a very distinct different scattering, which maybe later we can use to make a polarization-sensitive detector. The simplest way of thinking about the optical resonances in high-index nanostructures, nanoparticles or wires, is as follows. If you think of a very big wire, big compared to the wavelength of light, you could think of sending a light. Some light will enter a high refractive index nanowire, be captured by multiple total internal reflections, and you expect intuitively a resonance to occur when you can fit an integer number m of wavelength around the circumference of the wire, 2 pi r. Then light that's just incident will constructively interfere with light that has gone around once, twice, three times, etc. And therefore you have two great things. One, you build up high light intensities inside the wire, which you may want to use for nonlinear effects or photodetection, or you can use it for very strong light scattering. Of course, if we scale these wires truly to sub-wavelength, sub-free space wavelength dimensions, then ray tracing pictures fail, but you can still look at the different transverse magnetic and transverse electric modes that you can still recognize having 3, 2, 1, or 0 wavelengths fitting around the circumference. And all of these modes you can resonantly excite. Now, the nice thing is that it doesn't all, if you go truly to the nanoscale, you're not limited to just the circular cross-section wires. If you look at square, circular, hexagonal, triangular structures, maybe square ones are nice to make with all sorts of fabrication technologies, then all of these exhibit similar, for example, one wavelength, dipolar resonances, monopolar resonances. And if you look at the absorption efficiency, for example, for silicon nanowires as a function of wavelength, you see that these different shapes all show peaked structures, strongly enhanced absorption, this absorption efficiency, so absorption cross-section normalized by geometrical cross-section. All of this shows very strongly enhanced absorption due to the effect that you can excite a resonance. The nice thing is this is not limited to silicon. You can do it in important CMOS-compatible materials, germanium, or you can do it in gallium arsenide, SiGs, if you want to use this for this optical resonance for solar cells. Another nice thing, which we know from plasmonics, if I bring two metallic particles together, I can form bonding and antibonding modes that have different excitation energies. The same thing holds here. This is an optical image of two silicon nanowires sitting close together in section 2. Here's the SEM image of the two wires. And here in this section 1 and 3, the wires are just sitting separately. Here's a skill bar of 50 nanometers. So you see, as you bring these wires in one region close together, the color observation under white light illumination is very different. And the simple way to think about this, which is mathematically shown in this paper, is that if you think of first a single wire, it will exhibit S, P, D-like modes, or a 0, 1, 2 wavelength around the circumference. If you're a chemist, you might think if I bring two atoms with S-like properties together, I can build bonding and antibonding states. The same you can do out of the modes of high-index semiconductor nanowires, only now you form antibonding and bonding states that have a different excitation frequency. So you can, by bringing structures together, you can tune the frequency where such structures strongly absorb or scatter light. So if you want to build a nanowire photodetector array, you better take into account that neighboring wires can talk to each other. So let's look at a real device. Here's a germanium nanowire, schematic of germanium wire hooked up between two electrical contacts. Here's the SEM image, and we're going to illuminate it from the top. And the hope is that we can locally, with a close to diffraction limited spot, for example, we can locally excite the wire, get light spinning around the circumference of the wire, have the light spend a little bit more time in the semiconductor than it would do in a planar case, and therefore we can enhance light absorption at some resonant wavelength. Okay, here's the photocurrent spectra for three different wires. One that's 10 nanometer in radius, 25, and 110 nanometer in radius. So the smallest one, again, just like in the light scattering, shows the strongest response at the blue part of the spectrum, or the shortest wavelength part of the spectrum. Nice peak. Bigger one shows two peaks. An even bigger one shows three peaks. And the reason why we believe this is a true resonance, geometrical resonance effect, is that if you look at the materials absorption as a function of wavelength, that's rather boring and monotonically decreasing and drops at the direct band gap of germanium. So none of these peaked features are in the materials response. They truly have to do something with the size, or also later I'll show you geometry. So if you want to really prove that, of course we can do simulations of, if we illuminate a wire of a different types of size, we can see how much light intensity or what the electric field inside the wire is, and from that we can predict the absorption and thus the photocurrent. And here for the three wires that I just showed you, I plot absorption efficiency as a function of wavelength. And also, and that's the simulation, the black lines that show two, three peaked feature. And on top of it is the photocurrent as a function of wavelength, which is a very good measure of the absorption. And a very good agreement between these different types of curves allows us now to say, yes, we can enhance photocurrent through resonances, but also, having done the theory, we can identify each of these peaks with a well-characterized optical mode of the wire. And therefore, we can start optimizing things. So here's an optimization map of the absorption, in this case the absorption efficiency, so absorption cross-section, how big the wire, from how large an area effectively the wire captures energy over the geometrical size. Knows that this absorption efficiency can go above 1, so it looks optically bigger than it is physically in an SEM image. And this is as a function of radius and illumination wavelength. So, for example, if we take a 110 nanometer radius cross-section, we see 1, 2, 3 peaks, and these are the 1, 2, 3 peaks that showed up in the photocurrent spectrum. So alternatively, I could say I want a detector that operates at 1 micron wavelength. That means that I can have to choose a nanowire radius of about 60 or so nanometer. Then I can enhance the light absorption resonantly. The first time my student Lin Yuzhao made this map, I was somewhat surprised, because note that some of these resonances occur in structures that are as small as 10 nanometer radius. And I always thought this is only the domain of metals. We can't do things like that in semiconductor nanowires. But this is the TM0001, let's see, this one, 01, depending on what language you use, resonance. So where we have effectively zero wavelength fitting around the circumference. The second one that has one wavelength around the circumference is this one, and you see the nice linear scaling between radius and illumination wavelength that tells you, I'm using my microphone, that the resonance occurs when you fit an integer number of wavelength around the circumference of the wire. So the next question is, what about having this marriage of metals and semiconductors? What could happen if you put together two entities that have wildly different physical properties? And of course, we already know the answer to this one, but the question still remains, what happens? And I'm now putting you above the metals, maybe. And arbitrarily, Sasha, of the semiconductors. What happens if you bring these two structures together that both exhibit very strong optical resonances? What happens when you bring them together at the nanoscale? So, the first question you might ask is, why add the metals? The semiconductors were beautiful by themselves. Why add the metals? And the interesting thing is that it's an unavoidable thing. You can't do without the metals if you're thinking about devices, because the semiconductors do great a job at light to photocurrent production, but the metals you need for charge extraction, application of fields, and their high conductivity, electrical conductivity, is basically unmatched. So the people that say plasmonics won't be there, basically plasmonics will be unavoidable, because as soon as we have photodetectors at the nanoscale, immediately we'll need metals to extract current out of these photodetectors. So we better think about the optical properties that these metals have. And in fact, there are general great opportunities for metals in optics. And here are some general and specific opportunities. One of the key things that metals enable is scaling of optics. So although there's always some heat deposition in the metals when light interacts with the metal, the unique opportunity is that actually the electronics that is associated with, for example, a photodetector, is becoming better. We can go higher speed, lower electrical power, lower voltage. So note that at the cost of having maybe a little bit of extra optical power losses, we can actually have a gain in terms of a lower electrical power. And sometimes a lower electrical power consumption is a device performance parameter that outwins the little bit of loss you'll have in the metal. Also, metals are great for thermal dissipation. Metals enable electrical and optical functions at the same time. And here's some examples what you could do in terms of sources, modulators, and photodetectors. Mainly, these things can become small and extremely low power, consistent with power levels that you want to use in future CMOS technology. So let me give you an example. Here's a nanowire. And now we have two electrical contacts. And I've shown you an example where the metal contacts are far away from each other before. But of course, in scaling electronics to higher and higher packing densities, we'll have to bring these metals closer and closer together. And at some point, you might wonder, well, can the light still get into that little gap where the nanowire is sitting? Well, it turns out that their plasmonics can help us actually light polarize normal to a slit in a metal film, so normal to the metal that hooks up the nanowire electronically, you can significantly drive a gap plasmon or a high field inside the gap and try to further enhance the light intensity in the nanowire using both a metallic and a nanowire antenna effect. And here's a simple simulation that shows the absorption efficiency as a function of the thickness of the metallic contacts that hook up the nanowire. And here's the geometry nanowire, here's the metal, this is the thickness I'm talking about. The reference line, the red dashed line, is the absorption efficiency of just the nanowire with far contacts spaced far away. And now we are thinning the metal contacts thinner and thinner, and you'll see that there's a one resonant or a metal film thickness that gives higher absorption than just the wire. And if you make the metals thinner than about 100 nanometer, which is completely realistic for future nanowire detectors, you can get absorption efficiencies as high as 6. And the reason, if you look at full field simulations at different cross sections, is actually that you can cascade a resonance in the metal film. Here are the two metal contacts, here's the wire. You can cascade that resonance with a resonance in the nanowire itself and have this great marriage between metals and semiconductors that make things better. Here's one simple example that shows this. As we hook up a germanium nanowire between 3 contacts. And the only reason to have 3 is that we can have a nanowire that's grown by chemical vapor deposition that's constant in diameter and physical properties. So we can hook up that same wire between these 2 contacts and between these 2 contacts. And then with a laser beam, we can raster over the structure and make a plot of the photocurrent as a function of position. Obviously, we're limited by the laws of diffraction here. But now the interesting thing is that as you change the polarization of the electric field from normal to the slit to horizontal, parallel to the slit, in one case where the field is horizontal along the slit, we only see high photocurrent from the wire when we have a wide gap. In the other case, we see actually more photocurrent from this very short section of germanium wire if the electric field is normal to the slit. More actually than from the wide slit where we have more wire exposed. And the only reason is that we can drive this plasmonic resonance inside the slit in addition to the wire resonance. Now, one next thing, which is a beautiful, fun collaboration with Nader and Getter's group, is to think about how can metals and semiconductors truly do something unique together. And here's an example of a semiconductor, in this case silicon wire, hooked up between 2 contacts, and one of the contacts, intriguingly, is extended over the silicon wire. And here you see a fibbed cross-section of this structure with a gold hat sitting on a semiconductor wire. And the important thing is that we're at the nanoscale, so below the wavelength of light, we're going to illuminate this as truly small structure, sub-100 nanometer. So it turns out that these metals that we overcoat on the semiconductor not only can perform an interesting charge extraction, but also an intriguing optical function. So let's have a look at what could happen. Well, if you have a bare wire, we know that it can resonantly interact with a wire scatter and enhance absorption. Turns out if you put a metal hat on it, then you can come in with light with the electric field normal to the wire axis, which is into the board right now. One can drive a plasmon resonance that actually produces fields that intersect the wire to further enhance the absorption. So that's an interesting thing, which we've shown. But the one I want to share with you comes out of this intriguing paper by Nader and Getta's group on cloaking a sensor, and it is where you put an electric field along the nanowire. And then the interesting thing happens that because the dielectric constant of metal is negative and the semiconductor is positive, the electrons are going to be displaced in opposite directions. So we can make 2 little dipoles that can violently oscillate, but when they're truly spaced from each other in a sub-wavelength distance, these oscillating dipoles that try to re-radiate or scatter the light will cancel each other through destructive interference. And I promised Peter Nordlander to not have equations, but there's my one equation. What you can have if you very carefully tune the volume of metal and semiconductor is that you can exactly make the dipole of the cover, metal cover, and the nanowire opposite, and you make it effectively invisible in the sense that it doesn't scatter light effectively. So here's the full field simulation, where we first look at a light wave bouncing off of a metal mirror. Then we put a tiny little silicon wire on it, and you see the light wave scatters now by the wire, and you distort the phase fronts near the wire, because a wire can very strongly resonantly scatter the light. But then you give the little wire a gold hat and the face fronts nicely restore due to the cancellation of the scattering effect. So can we see this experimentally? Here's an example where we have a silicon wire with here the metal pads coating, overcoating the wire. So there it looks like this cross-section, a flipped cross-section. And you see that if you have the electric field along the wire, as for this case, this area under white light illumination looks darker or less bright than the bare wire. And you can verify this, that this matches truly an experiment by first looking at the full field simulation of the scattering as a function of wavelength. This is the bare wire scattering spectra. This is the covered wire. And here in experiment, we get pretty good qualitative agreement between the these simulations and experiments. So can we still use it as a photodetector? Answer is here, yes. We hooked up one of these nanowires that has a gold hat, and we can plot the absorption efficiency, which is going to be a measure of the photocurrent as a function of wavelength. The bare wire here, cloaked wire, actually just shows a slightly shifted spectrum in absorption. And if you look at the normalized photocurrent as a function of wavelength, we get in the actual measurement quite good, again, qualitative agreement. Now, the most interesting thing about this is that by bringing metals and semiconductors together, we not only can have great electronic advantages in extracting photocurrent, actually, we have an opportunity to tune, which was pointed out by Nader and Getta's paper, we can tune the ratio of the absorption and scattering cross-sections. So here's the absorption spectrum now on a log scale, and here's the cloaking target wavelength. You see a drop maybe of a factor 3 or 4 in absorption. The scattering can drop by a couple orders of magnitude. So by bringing metals and semiconductors together in devices, which we might naturally do anyways, we can start tuning this ratio. So what are the general conclusions out of this? Well, it's sort of interesting if you start looking at all these nanoscale electronic, optoelectronic devices, we're naturally moving away from some sort of conventional design technology that gave rise to beautiful instruments like the microscope, where you could clearly point out the optics, the microscope objective, lenses, etc., mechanics, the body of the microscope that would hold everything together, the electronics that does great image processing, things like that, thermal components. All of this, as you start scaling to the nanoscale, things become hard to see what is what, and we're going to have new types of devices. And this is what my group is trying to actively pursue, devices where semiconductors and metals simultaneously perform multiple functions in the same physical space. So you've seen nanowire photodetectors where the metals not only are electrical contacts, but also cloak or make the device invisible, maybe for image sensor applications. We're working on metallic electrodes that can inject charge into quantum wells and then have the emission immediately be coupled to the electrode that also acts as an antenna and thereby can radiate the emission in a well-defined angular distribution polarization. We're trying to build structures with slits and gratings that can beam emission, but also the structure that actually causes the beaming of the emission can be used to apply a field across quantum dots, which are the emitters in this case, and tune their emission wavelength through the quantum confined Stark effect. We're trying to build metallic structures that can, where the metallic films can take in light, concentrate light from a fundamental wave, generate second harmonic by applying a field, electrical DC field, and effectively we're mixing a DC field with an atom up to 2 photons at the fundamental to produce second harmonic that's modulated by an applied field. So this is a famous electric field-induced second harmonic generation, but the plasmonics can truly help to concentrate the light. Many other things in terms of practical devices. We're building modulators where the metallic contacts guide light and perform optical cavity functions, but at the same time, the metals that define the waveguides can also perform as electrical contacts by applying a field across a nonlinear medium. or together with David Miller, we're hooking up nanoscale slot waveguides to semiconductor photodetectors, where the metallic contacts not only can be the waveguides, but also the electric contacts that pull out photocurrent. Or most recently, we've been able to hook up quantum well sources and have them emit into nanoscale 80 nanometer wide slot waveguides, where we can use the metal not only to define tiny little waveguides, but also be used as electric charge injectors for the quantum wells. So we're interesting, I guess, in an interesting moment where we have all these great plasmonic building blocks that we've looked at for a great time. They concentrate light, have relatively low Q factors, but strong light-matter interaction. The only drawback is that the metals produce heat. And that's where I was becoming more excited about, I guess, something that's really well known, that semiconductor and high-index structures can scatter light effectively. But it's not been as much used, I think, yet as we can in terms of devices, because just having metals only allows you to do passive things. Making devices also needs semiconductors. And therefore, we need a true marriage, which naturally comes about between the semiconductors and the metals. And with that, I'd like to conclude that hybrid is definitely better, partly because it's simple and simply unavoidable. So thank you for your attention.